This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Spot On, tech that helps your business grow. Request a demo at spoton.com. And GigPro. Change the way you find staff with GigPro. And Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup. And now, calling in sick to be here, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, we are hitting the hyperdrive button to get into the 22nd century. That's right. The next century. And here to tell us all about what lies ahead for us in the future of spirits, is the co-founder of Next Century Spirits, Mr. Joel Pollack. Welcome.
Welcome. It's great. Thanks for inviting me, guys. Happy to be here.
Well, you brought whiskey. I mean, this is a no-brainer for us.
Yeah, man. You're a guy behind the scenes. You're a guy behind the guy. And I don't think we ever would have met had it not been for our great little network of people we know here at the kitchen inside. I give a shout out to Michelle, who works over at MRC. But it's through an NC State connection, from what I gather. And you also, we're burying the lead a little bit. You do liquor, but you're also a professor, an associate professor at NC State. Mr. Smart Guy over here.
Yeah, so came down here to NC State, I guess, 21 years ago now. Been a professor in the Department of Forest Biomaterials. Associate professor there, so work in an engineering program, actually, right? So that's sort of my day job, if you will. I go about and teach students and put engineers into the paper industry.
Yeah, so it specifically, like what I looked in areas of expertise, this is from the NC State page, engineering multi-phase materials, including porous, fibrous, web structures, foams, natural superabsorbents, enzymatic. I can't even say the words that are on your thing. Manipulation of material structure, nanoscale fiber composites, and novel application of rheological phenomenon.
Yeah, that's a way you say really big words and you confuse people so nobody knows exactly what you're doing, so you can go make whiskey.
Right.
Yeah, because you have been published many times. You guys might have read the good old banger, Bacterial Valorization of Pulp and Paper Industry Process Streams and Waste.
Oh, that's my all-time favorite read.
Or the one that had kind of a Tarantino spin at the end was Impact of Dyes and Finishes on the Aquatic Biodegradability of Cotton Textile Fibers and Microfibers Released in the Laundering Clothes, Correlations Between Enzyme Absorption and Activity and Biodegradation Rates.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's probably on most people's shelves.
It's like New York Times bestsellers right there.
Yeah, you know, it's great reading. You know, it's really engaging if you're into that sort of thing. But yeah, so I do a lot of different things, right? So not only teaching, right? Of course, as a faculty member, you're doing teaching and you're doing a lot of research. And right, those are some of my research publications. But we're taking different components of wood and the lignin one, the valorization one, and trying to turn that into different sorts of base chemicals. And then also doing some studies related to laundering, right? So when we go through the laundering process, we're generating a lot of microparticles, microplastics, and what happens to those, right? So study a lot of different things at NC State. It's one of the great things about being a professor. You get to do lots of different things.
You know, as much as we poke fun, I'm actually kind of fascinated by that.
Oh, yeah.
Also, microfiber towels suck at the bar. Everyone likes these microfiber towels. I'm like, no, just give me the old cotton one because that one absorbs. Am I wrong? Like, what's up? You're Mr. Absorption.
Yeah. Like, so the microfibers push things around a little bit, but the cotton absorbs and, you know, the cotton biodegrades too. So probably not a bad thing to have.
Right? Yeah, but you can't clean your eyeglasses with cotton. And the you need those little microfiber cloths.
Well,
but then even they get dirty because they hold the things, and then you can't reuse them as much as you want. You, and then the whole microfiber cloth industry.
Well, that's why you
things.
Have two in the bar. Well, the microfiber is to polish the glassware
right.
and your eyeglasses, I guess. And then, and oh, this is a great connection to everything that you do. A little secret I learned way back in the day when we were at Cafe Del Rey, and I want to get there in a sec, was that Jan, who was our maitre
d'. I remember Jan, yes.
Do you remember her affinity for asking for gin all the time so that she could clean her glasses?
I do remember that.
Interesting.
She would always, Jan was an older lady, fantastic. Like,
not
just
older. She was probably, at that time, she's probably how old we are now.
We're older ladies, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're the old people now.
Says you.
At the time, you and I were like 27, 28, and now, yeah. But we would always take a little bit of gin on a towel, and then she'd wash her glasses with that. I assume that the rubbing out the alcohol in there is what cleared it all up. I do want to bring the moment down for a second, uh-huh. only because we're talking about Cafe Del Rey. I'm going to get a little choked up.
Uh-huh.
But I'm really sad. It really saddened me, and I had to mention it. We lost somebody in damn it, I'm going to fucking cry. We lost somebody in our industry, and it was the general manager that was there when I first became a wine director. God damn it. And Matt was there, too. We both were hired. I don't know if Michael Morissette hired you officially. Were you there when Lori was there?
I was there when Lori. Well, you hired me, and then Lori was the GM who rubber stamped it.
Yeah, and then Lori swiftly was kicked to the curb. Sorry, Lori, and she's still with us. She's fantastic, and she's got a thriving career as GM. And
she runs that big place called the Wilshire or whatever, I think, in Santa Monica.
Well, she did, and then she's done other things since
okay.
then. But Michael, he actually opened a 2-star Michelin restaurant called Melisse with one of the greatest chefs on the West Coast, Josiah Citrine. Who you've anyone that watches Top Chef will see Josiah on at times, and he's a legendary
guy. I haven't even told you about this, but we have entree into Josiah, and he might be on a future episode.
Great! I used to sell him wine.
Yeah,
but Michael was the front of the house manager partner with Josiah. He opened that place up. Really, if you know Santa Monica at all, and you know Melisse, you know that is one of the greatest restaurants in all of the area. We worked with him for a few years at Cafe Del Rey, and then eventually he moved on to the Strand House in Manhattan Beach, where he was a partner for 9 years. He unfortunately lost his battle with COVID, a 6-month-long battle, and he couldn't recover. And our mutual friend, Nick Palmer, who was his assistant general manager there, then moved on to other things, but he wrote this beautiful piece about Michael's life and career, and it touched me, and I was like, man, that really sucks. And I texted you late at night when I found out a couple days ago, and then I thought about it, and it's like Michael was there to like really connect and like foster the relation, the business that we ran.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about him very often, but he was kind of the guy pushing all the buttons and making things happen.
Well, you know, I not that Joel, I know this is foreign to you, and maybe our listeners don't care about a GM that was in Los Angeles with us, but yes, you're right. In many ways, he did sort of foster and spawn our relationship. But I actually have shared a story about him on the show before.
Really?
I don't think I mentioned him by name, but you know, we talked about the art of hospitality and coming in. And I was, I don't know if you remember this, Max, but when I would come into the bar, I would often have a wrinkled shirt. And
yes.
This was a pet peeve of Michael's. And I was, in my mid to late 20s and, probably wasn't that sharp around the edges at that point. And at one point, he, after reminding me many times or suggesting that I iron my shirt, he brought me down to the office. And he actually crisply ironed my shirt for me and
That's
gave
right.
me instructions on how to do it exceptionally well. And I really appreciated that. And I thought that that was a great, not just tell somebody, but show somebody how to do something.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to just do it.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, so my heart goes out to his family, his wife Prissy and daughter, and everybody else that worked with him. So I'm sure we don't get a lot of LA connection people listening to this podcast, but if you do and you remember Michael, you know, shoot us a little message on Instagram, whatever, just to remember him. But All right, let's move on with that, though.
So does gin really clean your eyeglasses?
I guess so. It can, right?
I mean, you would think like whatever it is in the alcohol pulls off.
So usually the first shot makes you see clear. The second one, not so much. So.
Nice. Okay, Joel, yeah, you're a professor of a pretty high level. You engineering, NC State is known for their engineering program, so that's pretty exceptional. You're published as a professor. How do you find the time to then go run a spirits company?
Yeah.
And why?
That's a great question. So I get that question a lot, like how do you balance all these different things that you do, right? And for me, it's really about a lot of passion, right? And a lot of being able to find interest in different things and constantly exploring new things and seeing new things that are out there. So, you know, daytime job, working at NC State, doing all those sorts of things, nighttimes, weekends, that amount of time I'm spending working on the Spirits Company. We've been really fortunate that once we got up and off the ground about 3 or 4 years ago, now we have about 40 employees or so that are working in the company.
Okay.
And so they're really doing most of the day-to-day. Matter of fact, they're doing all the day-to-day operations of this. And so now we're at the point where I can kind of just spin the wheel, if you will, right? Come in and spend a little bit of time every week with the crew over there and just keep things moving along.
Wow. Is there any crossover between the work that you do at NC State and reusing all these materials and then making spirits?
Yeah, there's definitely a connection, right? So when you think about whiskey and a lot of the wood finish products that we have in the spirit space, my background is in paper science and engineering, right, where we're using different types of wood to turn those into all sorts of different types of products. So knowing the chemistry and the materials that go into the wood and how the wood is structured and how you can change that wood, right, to use it for spirits, right, that's where the nexus comes in. Really, when you think about it, a lot of what's going on in spirits is a wood chemistry problem in all sense. Even when you look at aging of wine and things like that,
yeah,
a lot of wood chemistry is happening inside of there. So having that background in there kind of is a springboard to give me some insights and how can we manipulate things and how can we create different sorts of processes and techniques to really try to enhance the spirits that we get.
So that makes me think because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wormwood is not actually wood, right?
Right.
Okay. But in reusing that material, because that's how you make absinthe, but it's technically illegal because it has of its hallucinogenic properties.
Right. It used to be illegal. It's legal now.
But you can't use wormwood, I believe, to make absinthe.
Yeah, they kind of keep that out nowadays, right? Yeah. So you're using everything except for that little hallucinogenic component that's in there, which is...
What's the fun in that? Edgar Allan Poe wrote a lot of great things on wormwood liquor.
And a lot of painters in Paris painted some interesting things from...
Might have chopped a deer off.
That happened in the South, so probably not.
Yeah. But let's talk about technique. So you and I had a lunch the other day, a couple months ago, and I was just fascinated as you're just talking about technique. So you're not just, you are a distiller. Next Century Spirits is a distiller. You make alcohol, you make liquor, both for yourself, you white label, you make it for other people, you create your own labels, you do all this, but you also inside of that, like, why would somebody want to work with you? Well, you were talking about your technology that you're infusing into this whole thing. So I'd love for you to kind of share that story with us so we can kind of understand what you're actually doing in the process of making liquor.
Right. So this kind of goes back to the genesis of Next Century Spirits and where we came from. Number of years ago, I guess probably about 5 years ago or so now, I was talking with a friend of mine who's in the spirits business, and he was talking about the really explosive growth of brown liquor, right? So brown liquors that are out there and how things have moved back to brown liquors and whiskeys. And you're seeing a lot in tequila, even aged tequilas now, and some rums and things like that. And sort of this trend moving back in that direction. He said, man, we're really having a problem with supply. How can we increase supply? And I started thinking about it and doing a little bit of research into it. And so then I go, okay, well, I think maybe I could come up with a way to finish these spirits a little bit differently than we do traditionally, right? So our traditional way of going about finishing spirits is you make the new make spirit, you put it in a barrel, and you wait, right? And you hope 4, 5, 6 years down the road, everything comes out well. So we went through and we developed the process. When I say we, I guess I can actually say me, right? So at that point in time, it was a idea of one working in a actually another startup company that we have here in Raleigh called Tethys, working in a closet with some vodka that I bought down at the liquor store to be able to go about and develop a process to really finish that vodka and give it that wood whiskey kind of finish to it.
Okay.
And so we went through and I started off thinking maybe I can do this instead of 4 or 5 years, right? Maybe I can do it in a couple of weeks or maybe a couple of months or something like that. At the end of the day, it ended up being more like a couple of hours, right? So we can go through this process and add this finish to the spirit in really a couple of hours rather than a couple of years. And so that became sort of the nexus to say, hey, maybe we could build a business around this, right? And maybe this could be something unique.
Hmm. And so is there information that you can share on how that works, or is that still proprietary secret?
Well, there's always, right? So you always have some of your techniques. Of course, we do have the processes patented as we go through that. But, you know, just a big picture, you think about what happens inside a barrel, right? So all the different things that are happening inside a barrel. You're adding some flavors, you're taking some flavors out, you're doing some chemical reactions are happening of different types. And so we took all those different processes and intensified them and put them into one operation, right? So we're not trying to replace the barrel aging, right? We're really trying to give a new tool, right, to the distiller that's out there to be able to give them a different way to finish their products and a way to improve their quality control and their supply chain and those sorts of things.
So is that simply achieved by heat? Like, yeah.
Yeah, we have a couple of different techniques that we do, right? Okay. So
he's not going to tell you.
Yeah. I know, but I guess for people to understand the basic science of it, you know, in wine or whiskey or stuff like that, you know, what from my very simple understanding of it, especially let's just talk bourbon for a second. So bourbon has to go into a new American charred oak barrel. So when you char an oak barrel, you're extracting sugars and other flavors from that barrel that then are, when you put a white spirit, is going to extract those spirits from it, especially with that's what the chemical exchange is happening. So it gets caramelized or some sugars and also can extract some wood tannin to give it some bite and some structure to it. I mean, so that's the only thing that I could imagine, right? Yeah, is heating the barrel in or putting it into a warm barrel versus just putting it into a barrel that's been previous charred. Yeah, you're not going to tell us, but that's
you know, if you
my hypothesis,
right? If you'd come into our production facility, everything that you would see looks a lot like a regular distillery, right? In terms of this finishing process, you wouldn't see anything that really looks out of the ordinary here. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's really a new tool, right? So you're right, when you go through and you char a barrel, you're caramelizing some of those hemicelluloses, right? So some of the wood sugars that are in there.
I didn't want to and say hemicelluloses because I thought, you know, it'd be intimidating.
Find a nickel for every. You know, it is a new tool, but you know what's a new tool in this industry that actually helps out with, maybe I don't know about the liquor industry, but really the food and beverage industry in a tremendous way, is somebody that is near and dear to our hearts.
Are you talking about Spot On?
I'm always talking about Spot On.
Yeah, because, you know, while they might not be able to, they could. They might not be able to age your whiskey, find a technique for that, but what they can do is help you inventory it. And so they can create up all sorts of systems. If, let's say, you were to start up a tap room or something to sell directly your spiritus liquors, which you can do in North Carolina now,
for sure.
They could help you figure out your inventory, what you have, figure out how to get your payroll all together, all in one app, and all very streamlined so you could do it from home because you're a busy guy, you're writing your papers, you need to check on your app. Oh, how much did I pay that guy this week? How much of my bourbon do I have in inventory? Well, they can figure it out. They can price it for you, figure out your P&L, and all with a simple phone call to one local person Tanya Menebo. Tanya's phone number is 858-213-7820. She is your spot-on rep. She can set up your whole system from A to Z and really tailor-make it to what your business needs. So if you don't feel comfortable calling her, just give her an email. That's TANYAM at spoton.com. Tanya Menebo.
And hey, change the way you find staff. I need to change the way I find staff, Matt. You know what? I put a post up at Crafton under Indeed, just because, you know, you're supposed to. Like,
Indeed,
oh,
you did.
You're like, oh, let's go figure this out. And I did. Guess how much money I had to spend on those ads? It was north of $800.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I went, wait, what the hell is going on? Now, granted, I got a lot of applicants come through, but it was crazy. And then it also was like a lot of people that didn't really pertain to the industry and like things that I wanted. And so I had to weave through like so much
stuff. A lot of money and a lot of time.
Well, change the way you find staff, because GigPro has 86th all the unnecessary BS to hiring in the hospitality industry. Never look at another resume again. Have access to thousands of hospitality professionals immediately. You can keep your core team focused on the job you hired them to do, which increases their employee morale. But GigPro themselves have enabled thousands of businesses to return to 100% capacity by just simply putting a post up and saying, hey, you want to come in? You want to work a quick shift as a busser, a dishwasher, a server, a line cook, whatever it is? They come in. The employer pays a small fee to have them come in for the day. The employee is covered with insurance. They pay a very small amount to have all of their insurances, basically peace of mind, set. And you work for the day, and you might work another day. And who knows? Maybe you like that job, and now you just come in, and now you're a permanent new member of the team. Or you just continually pick up a shift. Maybe you got a full-time job somewhere else. Maybe you're a cop. Maybe you're a fireman, and you got
maybe you're a professor.
3 days on, 3 days off. Yeah. In between bioscience stuff you're doing and making liquor.
Yeah, in between class, I can go pick up a shift.
There you go.
Or you could. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could do it by going to gigpro.com/NCF. Because right there, if you use that promo code, you, the employer, will get your first shift covered for free. So go to gigpro.com/NCFB.
Yeah, it fills shifts in minutes and you only pay if it works.
There you go.
One last thing we have to tell you as we're still on our kick over here, and the reason we're on a kick and the reason that I'm sure you're able to do multiple jobs is great coffee. And the coffee that we're talking about is Joe Van Gogh coffee.
Well, and I even kind of pulled a switcheroo on it. So Joe Van Gogh also makes Cafe Femenino,
which is
a fantastic coffee, giving women their fair share since 2003. And that's what we're drinking right here. A Peruvian Cafe Femenino coffee program is a one-of-a-kind ethical sourcing model committed to ending the cycle of poverty affecting women coffee farmers across the world. This specific one is kind of cool because it comes back to the beginning. The women of Secanor are proud to be the originators of the Cafe Femenino project. Above all, they feel proud to instill their daughters the expectation that they will grow up to be leaders in their community, just like their mothers and grandmothers. So, to learn more, go to cafefemenino.com, and you can also visit any of the Joe Van Gogh coffee shops all along the Triangle, Hillsborough, Durham, Raleigh. Check them out, and let them know that the gents over at the NCFB... Bless you.
Thank you.
Said hello. All right. Let's get into some whiskey.
Sounds great.
You got a lot in front of you. It's just, as you did say, you're like, oh, we could do an Irish coffee. And I was like, oh, how dare you? We got all this coffee in front of us and you got all this whiskey. So what are we looking at? You have a few different bottles here.
Sure. Let me tell you a little bit about what I brought along today. So first of all, a couple of people I have to give a shout out to, of course, my co-founder, Scott Bolin. Mm-hmm. So Scott and I, about 4 years ago, really set out, right, building this company and putting this together. And then our master blender, Nick Scariff. And so Nick, we brought on, he was employee, I think, number two. That came on after Scott and I, and he's just worked wonders for us, right, putting together different types of blends of whiskeys, and a lot of the creations you're going to see here today really come out of what he does, right, in taking our raw spirits and then turning them into a finished product, right, and so he has a lot of input into that. So I brought along a couple of different things here, sort of two groups of products that I have. One is your traditional sort of whiskey. our first one here is called the Creek Water, right? So Creek Water Whiskey. This was actually our first product that we branded in-house.
Okay.
Right? So as you said, we do a lot of production, not only for White Label and other people, but also bulk production as well. But this is one of our in-house brand groups that we did, we decided to do. And this was kind of a crazy story when we put this together and how'd we come up with Creek Water for a whiskey. Well, we had hired a person named David Long and brought David on to help us to put together some labels when we first started out. When I say we first started out, literally we had just put in our first production unit, hadn't sold a product yet, but we needed to get some labels and some designs out there. And he came to us and he's like, hey, I got this guy. He's great. He'd be great to pitch a whiskey to. He'd be great to pitch a whiskey to. And so David bugged us for a long time. And finally we said, okay, David, you know, here's gas money and a hotel room. Go talk to this guy. And this guy is a guy by the name of Yellow Wolf.
Okay.
And I don't know if any you know Yellow Wolf.
He's
Max.
Trap artist, or he's a musician.
Right, yeah. A musician up in Nashville. So little trap music, rap kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm hip, I'm cool.
And so he goes up there and pitches them. And
I thought trapeze artist, but you know, well, that shows where how. Yeah.
And so Creek Water it became, which was Yellow Wolf's first album was called Creek Water.
Oh, cool.
And
I do love the packaging here. It's in like this old-timey bottle with the, what do you call those caps? Like you would see
a pop swing cap, top.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was Yellow Wolf designed that, put that together. And we went from idea to product in 6 weeks, right? So in 6 weeks, we had our first whiskey then in liquor stores.
That is fast-tracking it. So with something like this, then you're not distilling anything then.
So,
okay, let's talk about this specifically. Right. Did you distill this, or this is just blended at your facilities?
No, so we bring in, so we contract distill, so we bring in new make from other places, mm-hmm. and then we finish this, right?
Okay.
So we take this and we finish it, comes in, right? It's a clear product to us, new make. Then we do what we need to do to turn it into a whiskey, right? Mm-hmm. So go from just a white whiskey, if you will, over into a sort of finished whiskey here. Mm-hmm.
And so what's the mash bill in this?
So in this one, this is a high rye mash bill.
Okay.
So we have 72% corn, a little bit of barley, and then the rest is rye in there, right? So it's got that rye spiciness, pepperiness that you get to it.
Excellent.
100 proof whiskey. So if you try it, be careful, right? It can sneak up on you a little bit. Yeah, so we can break that out and do this. So this, like I said, this one's been around now for about 3 or 4 years. It's done well for us, grown for us. We're right now that's our leading volume product that we're selling, that we own.
And to understand that, how many cases, bottles are you doing in this?
Yeah, so case-wise, we're just around, just about, let's say around 10,000 cases on that. Yeah, so we're in 27 different states with that.
Wow. I mean, that's a significant brand. That would be called like a mid-tier whiskey brand. Well, yeah, at this day and age, probably.
Yeah, for craft, right? Craft whiskey, small whiskey, right? That's pretty big, right? So we've been happy with that. We've just brought on some new folks related to our brand group and trying to grow our in-house brands, Anthony Monello, and he's been great, right? He's really spearheaded growing this product for us.
Yeah, this is – well, the nose is amazing.
Yeah.
Look at that vanilla cherry kind of on the front.
Yep.
Okay. I'm a fan of that. Ooh, yeah. It's 100 proof, but I mean, it does. Yeah, it's got the burn, but it's not like turpentine. You know, you can get some whiskeys where they're like, we are proud of saying we're 100 proof. It's like, yeah, because it's just straight gasoline.
You know, all the tingliness and stuff is on the front.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it goes down super smooth. It's nice and woody. And
That's usually what we hear about this particular product. A lot of sort of, a lot of wood sugars, that caramel, right? So campfire-y around.
You get Matt a couple more ounces, he'll be spitting some lyrics right now, doing some trap.
I'll be doing trap when I don't even know what it is. You're right.
Yeah, and then, you know, usually a pretty good clean finish on the back on this. Doesn't linger too long, right?
And it highlights the spiciness of the rye without burning.
Right. You get that spiciness of the rye in there.
Yeah. So you've probably had to have all the fun parts about learning how to distribute alcohol and putting them into different states, and probably just getting your own alcohol in this state is...
So, you know, that's one of the, right? So everybody has this great idea of, hey, let's go start a whiskey brand, right? and we were just like that when we started out, and we said, oh, we'll do this. And then you kind of realize the complexity of not just making the product, but then how do you get it out and into the stores and work through the distribution networks? And then you find out certain states you have to have a license in, and that's an annual license. And right, so there's a lot of complexity to it that goes into it.
The states that you're in, is that a strategic? Are you in states that are, say, not control states?
No, well, we're in a group of both, right? So controlled, non-control states, so it depends on... Just depends on the market. We are in strategic places, right? There's ways to know where people tend to drink whiskey, and so you tend to want to be in those states first.
And do you have one major wholesale partner, or are you just with different wholesalers in different markets?
So different markets. It can vary who our distributor is. We do work a lot with Southern Wine and Glaziers, right? Mm-hmm. And they've been really good to us as a strategic partner for us.
Sure.
And so we appreciate everything that they've done for us. And
my old company, I worked for them for
a few years. I noticed that. Yeah, I looked at your bio. I noticed that.
Oh, you researched us.
Yeah, of course. I did a little bit of background.
I was a company man for a good while. Yeah. So interesting. So within Creekwater, which Yellow Wolf, every liquor now just has to be tied to some sort of musician or somebody, some vehicle to get
some celebrity.
But I get that because it's all about branding. I mean, hell, Ryan Reynolds has a phone company now and a marketing company. It's like, sure, why not? My Verizon or Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I'll go with Ryan Reynolds. He's using the same towers probably.
He's hilarious and he's adorable. Why not? I'm sure his technology's sound.
Yeah.
So, but within that, how did Yellow Wolf contribute, like, artistically to this product?
Yeah, so... You know, he really has a ton of control over exactly what we're doing from a brand standpoint, right? So the bottle design was his, right? The artistry was his that he brought together on that. We worked with him to present him with a series of different types of liquids, right? And then he picked that out, right? And so that's what goes in the bottle is what he does on that. And then, right, he supports us with going out and promoting and using his social media and that platform to be able to do that. So as we develop other products, one of the things that he was interested in is trying to do a cinnamon whiskey, right? So then we came out with Creekwater Cinnamon and a lovely red bottle. So everybody loves a cinnamon whiskey now. And so we put that together for him. And then he has some interest in doing some limited time releases of different types of RTDs, right? And that's the other kind of product I brought today. So this was one that he did was called Mudmouth, which is a
RTD, ready to drink.
Ready to drink cocktails.
Or canned cocktails.
Yeah, canned cocktails. So different than malt based, right?
Right, because this is actual liquor.
Actual liquor.
Liquor in the can. Yeah,
exactly.
Because you can do the malt based ones, and those are hybrids of almost like a Truly or something, because they would be in the same category. But this is actual alcohol inside, or liquor, I should say, distilled liquor, which is cool. And if you talk to any salesperson right now, and I do all the time, they're always like, RTDs are the number one growing category in the alcohol industry.
Somebody sent you a text message about showing actual statistics about how canned cocktails were the largest growing section of liquor.
Who was that again?
I don't know. Really smart dude, though.
Doing his homework over here? Yeah. So, I mean... Could we open this?
Yeah, go for it.
Could we?
Yeah, of course.
I'm looking at it. So Mudmouth that he's got from Creekwater Spirits. Whiskey with natural coffee and vanilla flavors and carbonation. It's a 12-ounce can, and it's 8% alcohol by volume. So that's pretty legit right there.
So with 8% alcohol, does that mean you can sell, you still have, like in North Carolina, do you still have to go through ABC on these, or you can sell these at a wine shop?
Yeah, so in North Carolina, if it has distilled spirits in it, it still has to go through the ABC.
Okay.
Right? So that particular product has to be in the ABC store. And so if you go into the ABC stores, you'll see in the shelves, these cans down there, those are your legit cocktails in a can.
All right, I'm not blowing smoke. This is awesome. This is delicious. So this is coffee. It's carbonated coffee with some whiskey in there.
Yeah.
But like, smell that, Matt.
Mm.
And it's a little, it's got that vanilla, it's got the sweetness.
Chocolate malt.
Like, for obviously listeners, you know.
It kind of smells like Bailey's and a little bit like Guinness.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's like a Bailey's Guinness. It's got that mouthfeel, but the coffee in the back end, like if you're going to get one of those Starbucks bottles or so of coffee, the cold brew.
Right.
It's just that with, yeah, like almost like a Guinness-y type of feel. This is awesome.
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of growth in that particular area. So we're doing a lot of different spirits. As a matter of fact, we're getting ready to launch. Hopefully, by the time this comes out, we'll have some things in the store. A brand of ours that we're going to own called Caddy Cocktails.
Okay.
And so Caddy Cocktails is going to be really focused on the
candy?
Golf.
Caddy cocktails.
Yeah, like golf caddy.
Yep.
Right? So it's focused on the golf course lifestyle. And yeah. That's going to be co-branded actually with Greg Norman.
Oh, the shark.
The shark, yeah.
Nice.
So that's coming out. We're going to have that release is going to be around the Masters. Is right? Makes sense.
Smart.
Try to do it around that. That'll be
that's
the
soon.
Big, yeah, right around the corner. So making things as we speak, right?
Yeah. So nice. I want to dive into that creative process for a second. So like, especially when it comes to like Creek Water, right? Like these canned cocktails, it's a little bit of a different sect, I think. But like the Creek Water could be to the whiskey nerd, right?
Right.
So when Yellow Wolf comes in, do you give him basically like a barrel of straight corn whiskey and then a barrel of straight rye whiskey and a barrel of straight barley? And he's like, well, if I get 70% of this, or like I want it mostly this, but then I want a spice rye, or are you giving him mixed product at the point? Like, how dialed down does it get?
So, yeah, we typically, when we work with people, we're giving them things to work through.
Yeah.
Right? So, we'll put together a series of different samples, send that to them, let them try, get feedback from them, and revise that. Things that you learn as you go through this business is if you go that other approach that you just said and
yeah.
give somebody on the outside it's free
a
license,
too crazy. It's too much.
It can get a little too crazy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, people aren't always thinking about how do I actually make this at
well,
the end
also,
of the day?
Like
right?
Matt, if we were going to do like a Bordeaux blend and you gave everybody individual, you know, individual varietals and you gave somebody a Petit Verdot, it could be extreme in their flavor profile. And they're just immediately going to say, I don't like that. It's like, well, no, but this is a, this will be part of that,
right?
And then this and that. So it I think it does take the blender to kind of like harness what all of the little nuances are and then give it to a person
right.
rather than
you
be like
a little more shrimp, like a little more corn. Yeah.
Yeah. That yeah. makes more sense.
Right. And, I mean, I'm just wondering if maybe some people do get a little bit more into it, or some people just want like, give me more closer to
when
the finished
we
product.
Make our whiskey, because that's obviously on the table.
I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time.
We're going to do it this way. Well, yeah. I do have to say, and I kidded with you at lunch that we said this, but I'm not kidding. I will do this, and maybe we'll do this together. I want tequila de Trujillo.
Okay.
And I want that like for reals. And you know, Matt, you want to be my Randy Gerber to my George Clooney, and we make this like our own Trujillo tequila. And we
or
just...
if you're making Trujillo tequila, I could always make Weiss whiskey.
There you go. Well, sure, why not?
Yeah. And it sounds like, by the way, and this is not planned.
Whiskey Weiss.
The first announcement, Bubbles and Brisket 2 is happening.
Oh, yeah.
on June 4th.
Let's get into it.
Put it into your calendars. And it sounds like from what you're doing, we could have those out and packaged by the time Bubbles and Brisket on June 4th is here.
Let's put the pressure on Joel right now.
Sure. Right? We can do it right now.
Turn around a product in 6 weeks.
Right? Yeah. I'll get a contract. You can sign it right now, and here we go.
Yeah. But yeah, for real, Bubbles and Brisket number 2 is happening June 4th on a Saturday. I think we're looking at around 2 to 5. It's going to be in downtown Raleigh at Smoky Hollow, which is the new spot next to the Publix. Our good friend Jared, he's opening a place there. I don't even know if I can announce who's going to be in that space, but there are a bunch of great new food and beverage industry businesses that are going to be opening up in that area. They may or may not be open by the time we do Bubbles and Brisket. Maybe we'll be kicking it off for them, but we already have commitments from amazing pitmasters that we will announce as we get through there, but you're going to love who we have.
Put it on your calendars so you don't give Max and I the excuse when we hit you up, be like, are you coming? Be like, oh, sorry, I made plans that weekend. No, put it on your calendar now.
Yeah, save the
it's gonna be epic.
Yeah. So how does that work then when you're doing white labeling and, you know, a couple of schmucks like us say, hey, I've always wanted my own tequila. You're like, yeah, I get it, buddy. How much money you got? but I mean, how does that process work and how involved is the client in this whole situation?
Right. And so when we work with our clients and doing white labeling, we can work in all different levels throughout that, right? So we can do everything from making the product and putting it on the truck and then turning it over to you, and you go ahead and take it and do your distribution and marketing and all those sorts of things. Or we can carry it all the way through the distribution and help you get into stores and things like that. We're not going to do the marketing for you. You're going to do the marketing your own, but we can give you guidance and support through all those different steps. As far as actually selecting, right, the last liquid that you want in the bottle. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work with Nick Scariff, who's our master blender, and you'll give him some ideas about what you want. Then he'll bring together a series of different samples, and you'll taste through those samples, and maybe you hit one that you like, and you say, yep, that's it. That's the one I want. Or maybe you say, I want a little more of this or a little more of that, and we'll work around that to dial it into exactly what your profile is.
Well, and as far as like a quality level, right, like it's just based on what we would want to spend, right? I mean, like, is there like a through line of like, this is like, you, oh, so you want something like Casamigos? Okay, cool. Well, then you're going to need to spend this to get these types of raw materials or so. Like, can you do high end all the way down to really, really low end?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we can run the spectrum in that, right? So if you want to do like a simple, just like a well brand vodka sort of.
I want rot gut.
Like, yeah. Cheap. Like if you wanted to do that, I don't know if we would care much to do that. But, you know, easy enough to do, right? Yeah. So bad spirits are easy enough to do. So if you want to buy
but
that's why we white label and don't talk about who we send it to.
Yeah. No, that's cool, man.
I'm just thinking about it. I want to call an audible. I want Matt's Mezcal.
There you go.
Don't step into my realm of tequila-based spirits.
I can do agave-based spirits.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Now we're competing on the shelf, Matt. Thanks a lot.
Matt Max Mezcal.
Yeah. Max Matt. Mezcal. Let's just do that one. And I see that you've got your bear fight in your hand. And as you are opening that up, I don't know if you want to. I'm handing you a knife. But, really intrigued the conversation that we had originally that I want to jump into is your position in India, which something we don't talk about very often here, but you were talking about international global sales and your position of staying in India. I'd like to know, tell us what I'm talking about.
Right. So as we started growing this business and looking, we want to sell some whiskey, and where do people drink whiskey? To our surprise, we find out that India is the largest whiskey drinking country in the world. I never realized that. Not only per capita, but obviously then by volume as well, right? So they have huge brands, huge whiskey culture in that part of the world. So we set out and said, hey, we got to get into India. We got to figure out how to do this. And so, of course, we really started putting a push on this right around early 2020. say, like January 2020 and started...
Right before everything shut down,
right? Wow. And so right before we get into lockdown. And so we had gotten some things in place, actually set up NCSI, Next Century Spirits India, right? So we have another entity over there. That's our Indian arm, if you will, over there.
Yeah.
And then throughout this pandemic, we actually put a production unit in India.
Wow.
Right. And so that was not easy because we'd planned on going there and being there and setting it up with people from here, and India was closed down. You couldn't get into India. So we had to put everything together here in Raleigh, right? In Zebulon is actually where we did all the initial assembly of all the equipment, put it on a ship, sent it across the ocean, got it into India, and then some FaceTime and things like that. Worked with our employee over there to be able to set this piece of equipment up, get it installed, and now we're actually producing in India. Like the last, within the last month, we started doing production in India there.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, wow. And a lot of that, as we were talking, was mainly like to export this stuff to Asia proper in general would have cost more than the bottle itself, and a couple times over, from what I gathered.
Right.
Just made more sense to just build it there.
Yeah, so that's India has really high tariffs on liquor.
Yeah.
Right, so if you're going to bring that liquor in, right, the tariffs are really high. So if you're looking at something like a Jim Beam or a Jack Daniel's here, where you're saying, okay, it's maybe a $15 to $25 bottle, depending on the quality and things like that. Over there, it's a $50 or $60 bottle, right? So those prices just going up because of all the tariffs that happen in that space.
Just real quick in there, there's a weird loop around for hotels, though, somehow, right? From what I've heard.
You might know better than me. Okay. I don't know about that. About importing hotels or importing whiskeys.
Hotels somehow get around the tariffs for spirituous drinks.
One of the things whenever you go into this particular business, you find out different states and different countries have all sorts of different rules and laws about what you can do. So
Paris's daddy wasn't going to pay those taxes.
Right.
We're going to figure this out.
And we're going to get a special carve out here just for us. Yeah. And so like when you're in India, state by state, it's very different even, right? And crossing states, there can be tariffs and things like that. It's really a different sort of spirits world there.
Interesting. Oh my goodness.
What?
I just found my new favorite whiskey.
Whoa. Okay. By the way, Matt is a hater on almost everything.
Oh, come on.
Matt doesn't like anything. He doesn't like anything, especially in the liquor game. Like wine, he's got a wider appreciation. Like he's like, I get it. There's a wine for every purpose, cause, price, and all that stuff, and I can get it. But when we put liquor in front of Matt, he's such a fucking snob. And it's like, he's just like, I don't care if it's cheap, if it's expensive, or whatever. Is it well made? Is it whatever? Like, and you mostly hate most things in the liquor realm.
This is my observation.
Yeah, okay. You're a hater. So for you to say this means something.
Yeah, that is delicious.
Bear Fight. That's what we're drinking right now.
Yeah. It's an American single malt. Well, you tell us about it.
Yeah, so American single malt, Bear Fight. I'll tell you a little bit of background story on the name when we get to that. But we were lucky enough, we won a couple of double gold medals with that, right? So the New York International Spirits Competition, we won a double gold medal, and Forbes magazine named us one of the top 20 whiskeys in America. I'm sorry, top 20 whiskeys in the world, right? So there's an international competition. And then we were also named the North Carolina Distillery of the Year for what that's worth, right? But it was a great honor to be able to have that happen. And then just, I think, about last week, we received another gold medal and were named the best under 12-year-old American single malt in the country.
You're doing better than America's doing in the Winter Olympics right now.
Yeah.
And you just got the Matt Weiss stamp of approval. You can use that quote on all your publishing materials. Yes. No charge.
Yes, we'll
just
do that for sure.
Pay me in bottles.
But let's express, like let's paint this picture right here, because this is single malt. So like we're thinking a little bit more like on that scotch realm, I guess, if you will. But it has that peaty kind of just...
It has peaty, but it's like not... Like a, it's not like a Laphroaig or something like that, like an Islay Scotch, where you'd be like, "Whoa, that's got peat." I mean, it's really well integrated and smooth, and like I want to say it's super easy drinking and refreshing as far as whiskey goes. You know, like it's got all that whiskey coating on the mouth. But this is what I love about actually Irish blended whiskey mm-hmm. is that it has that like very smooth palate with the bite and the structure is there, but it doesn't attack you, you know? And right. I want more of this.
Right. Right. And so this, 2 year old, so aged for 2 years, and then we take that and finish that. Right. So we have, proprietary process that we that we use
that I talked about.
Other stuff though that goes into that to be able to create that. I'm glad you picked up on the peat, right? So we add that peat finish to this, right? So a nice peat finish in there.
How do you go about doing that? Because in Scotch, they obviously in Scotland they have a very laborious process by heating the actual peat and getting that smoke flavor into it, but you're doing it as a fast track. So can you share with us a little bit about that?
So a little bit, we're using the peat smoke again, right?
Okay.
So we integrate that into one of the steps in our process, right?
Okay.
So that's a little bit of the secret sauce in there of how we're able to do that. But
I want to know. Yeah. I want to know what the peat is. Like, what are you using to make that peat?
Yeah, yeah. So we do integrate that peat smoke into it, and it comes out. I think it comes out really well balanced, right? It has, like, to me, it almost comes like a Scotch / Irish whiskey / bourbon kind of in between all these different spaces.
That's a perfect way to say it. It really is. It's kind of, it's a little bit of everything, but man, it's... It's unique. It's got its own flavor profile, which is cool.
Which is, I think, what the title American Single Malt lends you to do. Because as we talked about when we talked about our friends from the Whiskey Distilling Company.
Virginia Distilling Company,
who are also making American Single Malt. Like, there's not a real standard definition as to what that means. So the category is kind of wide open to define it almost right now.
Right, right. And, you know, we're really excited about that prospect of what you just said there is it's an emerging category, right? So it's hitting the people that are both the Scotch drinkers and the bourbon drinkers, kind of crossing over those two, because a lot of times those aren't always the same folks.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And so being able to touch in both those markets and really define a new spirit.
So is this your brainchild, or is this somebody that you're working with that came up?
So
and you don't have to tell it.
Yeah, no, get into Bear Fight, because there's a story here.
So the Bear Fight, it was kind of funny. I'd mentioned we had myself, my co-founder, Scott Boland, and Nick Scariff, right, that we brought on as employee number two. And he's working with us as our master blender. And we started, hey, we need to come up with some names for a whiskey, right? What can we do? We're like, oh, we need some manly names. We got to find a... And one of us said, hey, how about Bear Fight? And I said, oh, that's fantastic. We can hire a bear and we can drive around the countryside and people can wrestle the bear. And if they beat the bear, they can get a bottle of whiskey.
Wait, had you just watched Borat or something? Because didn't he have one in his like ice cream truck?
Who knows? Yeah. I may have, right? This is where this may have all came from. Yeah. And so we joked about it for a long time of what a ridiculous idea that actually was. And then we found out PETA's not going to let us drive around with a bear.
No.
So so we continued, though, right, to create labels and enter whiskey spirits called Bear Fight into different competitions and things. And then when this one hit the jackpot, if you will, with the double gold, it was like, all right, we're going for this, right? So we're doing Bear Fight. So Bear Fight it is. And so by the time this podcast comes out, I'm sure you can go down to your local liquor store here. We'll be in the North Carolina ABC. Go to your liquor store, ask for Bear Fight. They should be able to order it and try it.
What
I want to get this on the back bar at Crafton, because this is just cool. Like,
what does the 750 ml of that cost you?
So we're going to be at $39.95. Is going to be the price point on this.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
No,
I mean,
that's like, I mean, you're in the same realm as like, I'm trying to think of a good, like Bullet. You're basically around like what Bullet would be.
Yep. And so it's kind of interesting because we missed out in this last spirits competition of being named the best single malt whiskey in America, right? So American single malt whiskey to a brand that was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And that bottle is running $180.
Jeez.
So I think we missed out by a point. Right on the scoring. So we missed out by 1 point.
Talk about price to value ratio.
Yeah. So we were pretty happy about that, right? Being at $40 and they're at $180. So not
bad. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And what's this, these little is that a gift set? What do we got there?
Yeah, that's just for you guys, right, to kind of take around some little samples, right? So
Thank
you can
you.
Share with your friends and that sort of thing.
You really did do your research. I know these guys are going to like this.
You also have a couple other cans here that I'd be remiss if you didn't mention. So what else are you producing here?
Yeah, so here's just a couple of other examples of RTDs that we make. So we have a blood orange vodka soda. Right.
Okay.
And then we have a whiskey mule that we make as well. Right. So some of these are white label brands that we're doing for other companies that are out there. But I thought I'd bring them by just to kind of share with you guys and show you the different types of things that we can do.
I've seen these around, so I won't mention exactly which they are, but I've seen, and these are cool, and everybody that knows them knows their brand and is a great brand.
Yes.
So.
Yep. We have some great partners here locally and really across the country and around the world. We actually send a lot of our bulk spirit is actually going to Japan.
Yeah.
So we're sending a lot into Japan right now.
I love that it's a world economy, and you are not afraid to dip into that, and you're jumping all into it. Like I'm all about it, man. Like this is super cool.
Yeah. Just to get back before we wrap up here to the business side of it, like I understand that creating something like Bear Fight probably personally is very rewarding and fulfilling, but. Is it more profitable to sell in bulk and do all these bulk brands than rather create your own brands in-house?
Yes. So if you can create a successful brand.
Yeah. And own that.
That's probably the best.
Okay.
Right. Walk in the liquor store and look at the shelf. There's a lot of folks that are right trying to be that next Casamigos, do those sorts of things. Not an easy row to hoe there as you go down that. But if you can do that, that's great. In the meantime, doing these bulk sales
kind of
really
keeps the lights on.
Keeps the lights on, also fills our production schedule, right?
Right.
Helps us with a lot of different things, keeping people busy and that sort of thing as we're continuing to grow our own brands.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say...
I'm speechless. I'm a little buzzed from all this Bear Fight. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that, while these might not be in there, but maybe some other versions of RTDs, like the aforementioned hard seltzers and wine, of course, and maybe some non-alcoholic sect, as that is rising as well, can all be found at somebody who keeps the lights on for us, the Triangle Wine Company. And the Triangle Wine Company has four locations, one in Southern Pines, one in North Raleigh. I'll actually be there Friday night to do a tasting on Zuccardi Wines. If anybody wants to come say hello, would love to see you there. And in Cary and in my neck of the woods, Holly Springs, we love the Triangle Wine Company, and they have great options for your wine, your beer, your RTDs that are not with distilled spirits, and use the NCFNB promo code to receive a little bit of a discount.
Well, and something that's kind of like an RTE, ready to eat, is definitely something that I could see a collaboration already afoot. And we're talking about Proof Alcohol Ice Cream, where they are infusing alcohol with delicious ice cream so that you think differently about dessert. And they have these beautiful red-branded freezers that typically are in North Carolina, although...
By the way, I was in the market the last week, and I saw a refrigerator stocked, so... I don't know if somebody's turning a blind eye or it's back on or whatnot, but there are still places you can buy them. I won't say them in case they're still not legally
allowed.
What
Matt's referring to, if you're not up on it, is that Proof Alcohol Ice Cream has kind of gotten a little bit, not in trouble, but the laws, somebody came up to and basically said, you can't sell alcohol and ice cream in a grocery store because it's marketing to children. It's like, it's also in the beer and wine section, so why is your kid running loose in a place where it's all meant for adults? Right. Anyhow, we're trying to get them back out there and get them approved for North Carolina. But you still can get Proof Alcohol Ice Cream in any other state that is listening here. They are based in South Carolina, and they have fantastic flavors like coconut rum and bourbon caramel. I would love a Bear Fight Berry.
Bear Fight Berry
ice cream. Right. Wouldn't that be delicious?
That sounds great.
And
blueberries and Bear Fight.
Yeah, I think we could do something great there. So get yourself some proof alcohol ice cream, especially if you're traveling down like to Charleston, which Matt and I will also be doing pretty soon.
We will.
For the Charleston Wine and Food event. It used to be Charleston Food and Wine, but yeah. They call it Wine.
Wine has taken over.
Yeah. So we'll be out there. If you're out there, hit us up. We're going to be on location next week, and it will be a fantastic time. So we'll look for you out there. Maybe we'll bump into good old JR, Jennifer Randall of Proof Alcohol Ice Cream while we're out there. But, Matt?
Well, it would be great to see it. Great to see Jennifer out there. And Joel, it was great to have you in here. Thank you for all bringing all of your wares. We really appreciate it. I will be putting good use to some of that bear fight. And for those of you out there, go to your local ABC store, ask for it at your bar, ask for some Bear Fight or Creek Water or any of these Next Century Spirits. If you want to create your own label, go check it out, nextcenturyspirits.com, and you will drink extremely merrily.
Thanks, guys, for the invite. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening to the NCFB podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.